Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hey everybody, hey, welcome back to the Elon Musk podcast. This is a show where we discuss the critical crossroads that shape SpaceX, Tesla, X, The Boring Company, and Neuralink. And I'm your host, Will Walden. One more thing before we start. Google Podcasts is being discontinued by Google. So if you want to continue getting episodes of the Elon Musk podcast, please check us out over at YouTube Music. Search us out over there, and that's where you'll be able to find our podcast through Google products. Thank you so much for understanding. I had no control over this. Google pulled the Google Podcast app off of Android, and I want to let you know where to continue finding the show. Over at YouTube Music, search for Elon Musk Podcast. So Elon Musk is currently defying a Brazilian Supreme Court order aimed at censoring certain user content under the guise of combating fake news. This legal conflict shows that there's a huge issue regarding freedom of expression and freedom of speech and the role of social media in Brazil. Now, the Brazilian judiciary has demanded that X block content from Brazilian users, which the court labels as false information or fake news, and Musk's refusal to comply with these demands has led to significant legal scrutiny, positioning him against Brazil's federal judiciary. Now, the inquiry, known as Digital Militia Investigation, does not concern the common issues of controlling big tech's influence, safeguarding democracy, or child protection online. Instead, it focuses on a political clash involving the Supreme Court and critics of Brazil's president. This indicates a politicized judicial system as of right now. Now, critics argue that the Supreme Court's actions represent a departure from democratic norms, suggesting that the Brazilian judiciary no longer operates independently. This scenario portrays a grim situation for democracy in Brazil, which they claim is deteriorating publicly. The controversy stems from the court's attempts to silence commentators with opposing political views, though, especially those who command significant influence through social media platforms. Musk and many Brazilians regard these actions as undemocratic and indicative of a tyrannical approach to governance. Now, historically, though, Brazil has championed civil liberties, with a constitution upholding freedom of speech. This principle has been foundational since Brazil's return to democracy all the way back in 1985. Making the current judicial actions against free speech particularly jarring. Now, the situation escalated following scandals involving the Workers' Party and former President Lula, who was imprisoned in 2017 due to corruption charges. These events tarnished the party's image and led to a shift in political power with the election of Bolsonaro in 2018. Now, Bolsonaro, a former army captain known for his straightforward style, was elected on promises to uphold privacy, private property rights, restore order, and freedom of speech, and challenging prevailing social and political norms in Brazil. His support largely came from those disillusioned with the previous regime's corruption and policies. And despite his controversial manner and rhetoric, Bolsonaro's administration made significant strides in fiscal management, deregulation, and improving the business environment through digital initiatives. Now, by 2021, though, Bolsonaro's potential re-election seemed threatening enough to his opponents that efforts were intensified to rehabilitate Lula's political image. The Supreme Court annulled Lula's conviction, enabling him to participate in the 2022 presidential race. This judicial intervention sparked widespread dissent, particularly online, where Brazilians expressed their disapproval. Now, the Electoral Tribunal responded by increasingly censoring online speech and targeting digital platforms to comply with their directives. The punitive measures extended to financial sanctions and also social ostracism, with some critics facing severe repercussions like imprisonment and exile, often without due process, for merely questioning the legitimacy of Lula's election victory. Now, despite the absence of legislation supporting the judiciary's stance on fake news, the court persists in its demands for social media platforms to block alleged misinformation, a stance that Musk has publicly challenged. Now, on April 6th, Musk highlighted the opaque nature of these judicial orders on X, emphasizing the lack of transparency about the reasons behind the blocking orders and the identity of the missing authority. He also noted the legal threats posed by noncompliance, including potential fines. Now, Musk's resistance took a more active form when he recently unblocked several users and threatened to disclose his communications with a Brazilian court, arguing that the public deserves transparency about these judicial interactions. There's another thing going on at X. We'll touch on that real quick. It's significant for its operations. The platform's brand safety score, as rated by DoubleVerify, was mistakenly low due to a display error, affecting advertiser confidence and investment in the company. Now, they have to keep the lights on in order to keep this fight going with Brazil. Now, the misinformation about X's brand safety persisted for several months, though, influencing advertising decisions detrimentally. The correction of this error in Musk's ongoing public fight against censorship in Brazil shows that X is in a tough spot right now. They're not making a lot of money. They're doing okay. But this brand awareness from DoubleVerify, the brand safety score, could hurt them. And it was months in the making. So I'm expecting a lawsuit from Elon Musk and X in the future for this. Let's talk about some SpaceX news here. The FAA and SpaceX are working very hard together to make sure that the next flight of Starship happens without a hitch. Now, Starship IFT-3, the integrated flight test that just happened a little while ago, was pretty much a success, right? So now they're moving forward with the IFT-4 launch, and hopefully everything goes well with that launch. Now, the FAA has to work with SpaceX in order to give them a flight license. They have to make sure that everything's safe for SpaceX, the rocket, the workers, and also people in the way of the rocket's flight. That's important. They don't want to hurt anybody, any property, or anything going forward with these flights. Now, this is important because SpaceX launches the Starship over the Gulf of Mexico. And apparently, according to the IFT-3 flight path, it was going to land in the Indian Ocean. The Starship was. The booster is going to land in the Gulf of Mexico. Okay, so the Starship might land in the Indian Ocean again. We're not 100% sure what's going on with this. We are guessing, everyone's guesstimating that it will happen similarly, but there is some FAA hinting at what may happen for this next one. So before anything happens, FAA and SpaceX will be working together to make sure to safe the whole operation. They have to make sure that SpaceX uses the time between this flight, the last flight, IFT-3 and IFT-4, to safe the area and make sure that they put anything in place that they found was wrong in the last flight. So anything in the booster or anything in the ship, they have to fix it. They have to change it in order to make it a safer flight for the future. Now, there's a possible flight in May, but it's not guaranteed right now. The FAA needs to modify the launch license due to changes potential changes in the flight profile. We don't know exactly where this is going to land, but it might land similarly close to where it was going to land in the Indian Ocean, depending on the mission. Now, the FAA will prioritize the public safety over anything else. And public safety is paramount for one thing mainly, but mostly there's two things. One mainly is the booster in the Gulf of Mexico, because that's going to try to do a soft landing on a virtual tower, according to Elon, on Flight 4. And I made a video about Flight 4 and Flight 5 of Starship. So Flight 4, they want to do a virtual tower in the Gulf of Mexico. This means that they're going to do the normal flight, like normal, like IFT-3, fly the ship to the Indian Ocean, get the booster, hot stage separation, all of that stuff. But after the hot stage separation, they're going to send the booster into the Gulf of Mexico, land it vertically in the Gulf, similar to what they would do with a launch tower. Land it, they're going to make a virtual tower. Maybe they're going to use some sort of AR, VR setup so they know exactly what's going to happen. I don't know what they're going to do at that point. But hopefully they have a really good understanding of the landing mechanics of the booster, because they haven't even gotten it close to landing now. IFT-1, IFT-2, IFT-3, we haven't even seen the booster get close to landing in the Gulf of Mexico. So IFT-4, if they can nail this, Elon has said in his latest talk that he wants to land the booster at Starbase. And I don't know if this is a great idea. I don't know. I'm so scared of this. I don't want them to move back 6 months because they landed a booster and it wasn't prepared to land yet. I'm terrified that they could blow something up or something could happen. They have a good RUD at Starbase and they could set themselves back 6 months. Now, I know this is a thing that they have thought about. They're rocket scientists, after all. They're engineers. They're scientists. They do this for a living. They make a bunch of money doing this. And I'm not that guy. I am a coder. I know how difficult code is, but landing a rocket, not 100% an expert at that. And that's why I default to the engineers and the scientists at SpaceX. And I trust them that they'll do the right thing. But I'm also scared that they're going to set themselves back. I just don't want them to do that. But the landing attempt in the Gulf of Mexico, let me know what you think about it in the comments below. I think it's scary. That's all I'm going to say. It's going to be a wild ride. It's going to be excitement guaranteed, as Elon says. But we do have some information from an FAA spokesperson. Jim Coleman said that, I think we could possibly get there, which means a launch in May. I'm not going to say we will get there absolutely, but I won't say it's out of the question either on the possibility of a May launch. He said that the other day, 3 days ago. He also said they're going to do some different things with this particular missions, referring to changes in the flight profile. So IFT-3, they did normal flight profile, booster back to the Gulf of Mexico, and it did a RUD. It exploded over the Gulf of Mexico, which is fine. They expected something like that. And they did hot stage firing, was great. They did the Starlink door. They opened up the Starlink door, which was fantastic. And they did some communications with the ground we've heard about. They did some live video feeds, which we didn't expect them to do, but it was fantastic as well. And then they tried to land the Starship in the Indian Ocean. Now, IFT-4, they're going to, as Elon said as well, they're going to try to get the Starship to the height, basically a melting point of the Starship as it reenters the atmosphere into the Indian Ocean. And then it's going to, they're going to explode it in the Indian Ocean. So we're expecting that. Now, there's other things, the virtual tower landing, not exactly sure what that is, but Elon has said it. They might do a public safety review. The FAA might do a public safety review with a full mishap investigation, or from the full mishap investigation that SpaceX does, just to speed up the process. And I think that's what's going to happen from here on out. Elon and SpaceX and company will do a full mishap investigation from the previous launch, and then the FAA will look at it and do a public safety review depending on that mishap information and investigation information that they send over. They're both willing and able to do this fast. FAA said they are willing to go fast by May. They want to. And the separation of the public safety review hints at a potential difference between public safety flaws and broader mishap investigation details. Now, SpaceX is going to have to do some things, though, before they launch this rocket. Pre-launch checks. FAA likely conducts a thorough review of the launch vehicle and launch procedures to ensure that they meet safety standards. As normal, they should do this. It can involve inspections, simulations, and analyses of new potential risks for IFT-4 and IFT-5 going forward. the flight path. If it's changed the trajectory, FAA might assess the flight path, a trajectory to ensure a minimal risk to populated areas and also debris. What could happen? Debris and blast radius. So if they run somewhere in the Gulf of Mexico, what's that blast radius look like? What's the debris going to look like? And where's the debris going to end up? Since the ocean is so huge, the debris from, it's a big rocket to us, but to the ocean, it's nothing. Don't think Elon and company and the FAA are going to worry about one rocket booster or one rocket in the Gulf of Mexico or the Indian Ocean. Now, another thing that the FAA works on is the launch abort system, the RUD system, basically, the FTS. Basically, this thing blows up a rocket if something goes wrong. And Elon and company have shown that it works after the IFT-1 mishap, where it didn't work and the thing spun out of control. Now they know what they're doing. IFT-2, IFT-3, both worked great. They're working forward. They're working with SpaceX on this. The FAA and SpaceX are working on this. Critical safety flaws, Elon and company are working on those. The FAA might want to confirm there aren't any critical safety flaws for the next rocket. Flight profile, like I said before, overall public safety is a paramount for the FAA and SpaceX as well. If anything happens, public safety-wise, Elon and company are going to be pushed back possibly for months, maybe a year or two, depending on the severity of the public safety incident. Now, IFT-5, this is going to be a wild ride. If they do that booster landing in the Gulf of Mexico, what's going to happen? I want them to go as fast as possible. And of course, iterative design is the best way to do rocket design. Apparently, because we know that Elon and SpaceX, they're killing it right now. They're doing great work. So there's no reason why they should not continue doing this in the future. Let me ask you a question. Would you pay to be part of a social media network? More importantly, would you pay to be a user on Elon Musk's X.com? So Elon Musk has just announced a plan to charge new users on the social media platform X, formerly known as Twitter, of course, a fee to post content. Would you pay for that? That's the question. This aims to address the ongoing issue of bot accounts that plague the platform. Musk believes that imposing a small fee on new users is essential for combating the influx of these fake accounts. Now, since acquiring Twitter, though, in 2022, Musk has repeatedly floated the idea of a user fee. He suggests that such a fee could effectively deter the creation of spam accounts driven by artificial intelligence and coordinating with troll farms, which can easily bypass traditional security measures such as CAPTCHA. Now, as part of an experimental policy implemented in October of 2023, X began charging new unverified users in New Zealand and the Philippines an annual fee of $1. Now, this fee enabled these users to engage fully with the platform, allowing them to post and interact with other content, which was otherwise restricted. Now, the issue of bots on X has been a persistent challenge, one that Elon Musk has vowed to conquer even before finalizing his purchase of the platform. His strategy has involved various initiatives aimed at reducing these unwanted accounts, which not only distort user engagement metrics, but also compromise the overall user experience. On April 15th of this year, attention was drawn to a change in X's policy that indicated a potential expansion of the annual user fee to additional countries. This update was first spotted by an automated tracking account on X and was later confirmed by Elon Musk in a series of posts. Musk said, "Unfortunately, a small fee for new user right access is the only way to curb the relentless onslaught of bots. Current AI and troll farms can pass the, quote, are you a bot test with ease." Now, he shows that he's using some rationale for the policy shift, highlighting the ineffectiveness of conventional security measures against sophisticated automated AI systems. Now, despite the introduction of a user fee, Musk clarified that new users would not be indefinitely bound to this fee. He mentioned that after an initial 3 months, new users would gain full access to the platform without any payment, thus providing a balance between initial security measures and eventual user freedom. Now, let me ask you a question. If the bots are so powerful that they can bypass everything, $1 fee doesn't seem like a lot if you can gain $1,000, $10,000, $100,000 from using the platform with your bot, of course, on the black market, on the gray market, there are credit cards that are stolen and possibility that they could use those credit cards with their bots to use their influence to make more money than $1 on the platform per year. The introduction of fees for new users coincides with broader efforts by X to cleanse the platform of spam and bots accounts, though. Earlier in the month, X initiated a major purge aimed at reducing these accounts, though the impact on the platform's bot population remains to be seen. There's no data out there yet from Elon Musk or from X. Now, Musk's approach to managing X also involves leveraging the platform's data for his other ventures. For instance, his AI company, XAI, utilizes public posts from X to train its machine learning algorithms. This integration shows that Elon is using his broader vision and all of his companies combined to make XAI better, but if there are bot accounts on X, he's not getting clean data for his AI models. And that's going to be a huge problem in the future. Now, X's strategy to monetize and also, let's say, enhance user engagement includes making its advanced chatbot Grok available to premium users. And like I said, if that's trained on bot information, there's no real upside to it. Because if there's millions of bot accounts compared to human accounts, it's going to be a tough go for Grok at this point. Now, Grok used to be offered at a higher subscription tier and is now more accessible, potentially increasing its use and relevance within the user base. Now, the financial aspect of these changes is significant. X has been facing financial challenges with a reported 71% drop in its value since Musk's takeover. The introduction of a posting fee could provide a new revenue stream at a time when the platform has experienced significant advertising revenue losses. Now, the decline in advertising dollars was particularly stark following a backlash from advertisers over content moderation issues. Companies like Comcast, Apple, and the Walt Disney Company withdrew their ads after reports surfaced of ads appearing next to inappropriate content, including pro-Nazi and hate speech. Now, Musk's direct responses to advertisers' concerns have been controversial. In an interview, he bluntly criticized those withdrawing their advertising from X, which reflects his unconventional approach to business and public relations. In response to the ongoing challenges with brand safety, though, third-party firms like DoubleVerify have been involved in assessing the suitability of content on X for advertisers. There have been discrepancies in these assessments, indicating ongoing issues with maintaining a brand-safe environment. The bot problem at X is not just a nuisance, but it's a huge operational challenge, impacting everything from user experience to advertising trust and revenue. And Musk's decision to impose a posting fee on new users is a strategic move to mitigate these issues, albeit we don't know how effective this is going to be, and neither does Elon at this point. Could drive some users away. I know to post on X, there's no reason for me to pay a dollar for that. I'll just move to a different platform. Most people think the same way. And these platforms have been historically free. And we can post whatever we want, whenever we want to. Facebook, even Threads now. All of these platforms, Instagram, YouTube, Spotify for podcasters, where we post this podcast. Everything's free to post. Why would I pay even a dollar to be able to post on this platform? Now, this policy change has sparked a variety of reactions like mine right there, and I would love to hear what you say about it, because if you're a user of X, you should be concerned about this. Some view the fee as a necessary evil, though, and I totally understand that. If there are hundreds of millions of bots running around doing malicious things, putting a barrier to entry in front of them is one of the best ways to mitigate this. Now, the quality of interactions on X, while others are concerned about the potential barrier it creates for new users, I can understand that too. Maybe you don't have a dollar to interact with these platforms. Maybe you're in a financial situation. Maybe you're in a different country than the United States, and you don't make a lot of money. You don't make a dollar that you can put towards social media. So I can understand that too. And you'd probably move platforms like I was talking about before. Move over to Threads or just move to Instagram or some other platform, Facebook, etc., so you could post your content. And that's understandable. And as X continues to evolve under Musk's leadership, the effectiveness of this new fee system in combating bots will be important all over. Stakeholders from users to advertisers will be watching closely to see what happens with this imposed $1 fee for X. On today's episode, we're going to be talking about SpaceX's HLS mission to the moon, NASA's Orion spacecraft, and how things may completely change for the Artemis missions going forward. Now, originally, NASA wanted SpaceX to launch the lunar HLS Starship to moon orbit, where it would dock with the Orion spacecraft, and the HLS ship would take the astronauts down to the surface of the moon. Now, something drastic may be changing in the near future. There's been murmurings that behind closed doors, NASA is discussing a low Earth orbit transfer of astronauts between the Orion spacecraft and the Starship HLS. Now, these are unconfirmed right now. They haven't released anything about this yet, but Ars Technica posted an article about it, and Eric Berger is very reputable, and he was the one that posted this article. What may be happening with the Starship and the Orion? So let's just wind it in a little bit, because we have to understand what the process is of getting the HLS Starship to the moon first. Okay, so first they have to launch a few fuel depots for the actual Starship to fuel up in low Earth orbit before it gets to the moon, before it launches to the moon. And NASA has said somewhere around 10-ish, and SpaceX, Elon Musk, said somewhere around 10 to 15. So we're going to go on the low side. We're going to say about 10 depots will be launched to low Earth orbit, where the HLS Starship will dock with them and fuel up before it goes to the moon. Then the HLS will be fueled up, and possibly in between the fuel and going to the moon, like that step right there, astronauts will fly on an SLS rocket to low Earth orbit and then dock with the Starship. Now, we're not sure if this is even feasible right now. We know that this is going to be a thing in the future, but there are some caveats to this that could make this a more impressive mission and also could save NASA billions of dollars in the future. You're asking yourself, why do they need the SLS rocket if it's not going all the way to the moon? That's what I'm asking myself too. If the Orion capsule could be retrofitted to be on top of a Starship or on top of a Dragon or Falcon 9 instead of a Dragon capsule, that's a possibility. But you're also probably thinking, why don't they just use a Dragon capsule and dock that with a Starship? Because Dragon capsules already go to low Earth orbit and they can dock with the International Space Station. So that seems like the logical next step, right? Not quite yet. So there will be a possible mission with the Orion spacecraft and the HLS Starship, because they need to test this out to see if the Orion can actually dock with the Starship while in space, because that's what they're going to be doing in the moon's orbit. And the Dragon capsule cannot go to the moon and dock with the Starship and come back to Earth. It just isn't feasible. It doesn't work like that. The physics don't work. The Dragon capsule is not built for that. So they need to use the Orion capsule or some other capsule that could be created in the future for docking with the Starship and then coming back to Earth. So once the astronauts are on board the Starship, then three or more astronauts would fly their way to the moon's orbit, where they would land on the moon's surface. And then when they're done with their science and experimentation on the lunar surface, they would fly back up and dock with the Orion capsule or the moon station, transfer the astronauts again. And then from the Orion, they would come back down to Earth. The HLS rocket would stay either in the lunar orbit or docked with the moon station until the next mission. And possibly just land on the moon and wait for another HLS rocket to come up, because there's a limited shelf life for these things while they're in space and orbiting the moon. So could land it on the moon, and it could become
a habitat for future astronauts. Now, the good thing about going to the moon in the HLS is that you're not cramped like the Orion spacecraft. The Orion spacecraft, even though it is a modern marvel of engineering, there's not a lot of room. You can't really move around a lot. You can't really do much. And you can't really stretch a lot. There's no room for activities there. With the HLS Starship, it's 9 meters round, 30 feet around. It's a massive ship. And if they can construct this so the astronauts could just fly all the way to the moon on the HLS rocket, it seems like it's totally doable, then they could land the Starship with the astronauts on board. And it would be a much better experience for the astronauts. They could have more experimentation time because the HLS rocket could have more room for experiments. And so low Earth orbit experimentation while they're waiting, or they could do experimentation all the way to the moon. And while they get to the moon, while they orbit the moon, and when they land on the moon. So the experimentation time and the experimentation mass of experimentation could be much bigger than just going in the Orion space capsule, because it seems like this is a win-win. We've been talking about this for a long time. I know a lot of space reporters were like, why do we need Orion when Starship's going to low Earth orbit anyway? And they're going to dock with Starship and then go? Didn't make a lot of sense. So we've been talking about this for a long time, but since there's murmurings within NASA now about this happening, there's totally a possibility. They're going to need to launch a few more SLS rockets before they change completely over to the Starship, because Starship can do everything that SLS can and possibly even more. It looks like a bright future for HLS Starship. Now, the first mission that these astronauts may do, because they can't go into the Starship immediately then fly to the moon. They need to test this thing out. So the Polaris program was going to test a docking from a Dragon into a Starship and do some low Earth orbit experimentation and check out to see if the Starship is feasible for low Earth orbit or moon travel. And that was going to be the initial docking and testing phase. So there's a possibility that the Orion could, or maybe even a Dragon could do this, dock with the HLS, two astronauts would transfer into the HLS Starship, while two others would stay inside the Dragon capsule and do testing from there, from a distance. They could do maneuvering, they could do some burns, they could do orientations, they could possibly even do an EVA, which doesn't make a lot of sense from a Starship standpoint, but it might be something they do in the future just for testing. Then they could redock with the Dragon capsule and then come back down to Earth. So they have to test the Starship out before they get it to the moon. So the HLS Starship might be the first test of this series of tests. And then that HLS Starship could fly to the moon and do a test landing on the lunar surface just to make sure that there's no astronauts on board in case something bad happens. So let me know down in the comments below what you think about this, because it seems like a logical step forward. Like, why would they even use the Orion capsule in low Earth orbit to test this when they have a Dragon capsule? But they do need the Orion capsule to go to the moon and come back down to Earth. So I could totally get that. I totally get that part. But everything else seems very logical. Dock in Earth orbit and make sure that everything's okay with the Starship and command a gigantic spaceship between the Earth and the moon, that sounds like a no-brainer to me. 150 to 200 feet long Starship. It's a massive ship. Can do all sorts of sciencing, all sorts of engineering on your way to the moon and in low Earth orbit while you wait. And then head to the moon. Sounds great to me. Let me know what you think down in the comments. Now, does this make the SLS rocket unsustainable for the billions and billions of dollars per launch that it costs? I think it does. Because if the Orion spacecraft only has to go to low Earth orbit, they could launch it from another rocket, whether it's a ULA rocket, whatever. It could be a Starship, or it could be another SpaceX rocket. Who knows? I'm not sure exactly what the configuration would be, but the SLS rocket is a jobs program. It makes America a bunch of money. And these people are spread across the whole nation. making and designing, building, engineering all of these parts to build this massive SLS rocket. So the SLS rocket is a jobs program as well. So they would lose tax money and they would lose funding if they get rid of the SLS rocket. So I don't think they're going to get rid of the SLS rocket. They may use it for deep space exploration or something like that in the future and just shift over to Starship and SpaceX for the time being for the moon launches. And maybe SLS will be more Mars and further out into the solar system in the future. But we know that Starship will be capable in the future of going to Mars as well. So there's really no reason to use SLS anymore, if this is true, other than super far out space, like science missions. It's a massive rocket and Starship can do everything that SLS can do and then more. So I think this might be the end of the SLS program. This might be the beginning of the end of the SLS program.
Today, we're going to be talking about a company named Max Space and the idea of building massive, massive, massive inflatable space stations on Mars. What is this? What is this thing? I'm not 100% sure that this is even feasible, but according to Max Space, within the next 10 years, we're going to have stadium-sized space stations in the orbit of the Earth, but also space stations on the surface of Mars, possibly in Mars orbit, anywhere in the solar system. And most of these, every component could be flown on a SpaceX Falcon 9, and in the future, for the stadium, the massive ones could be launched on a SpaceX Starship. Now, these things have been tried in the past, and some of them successful and some of them not so successful. But right now, there are two that we know of. One of the co-founders of this company actually has two inflatable modules in space right now, and they've been orbiting the Earth for a while. Now, I want to tell you about Max Space. They just released kind of a press release recently, and I'm going to talk about some of the points of this press release. 40 years of building successful space companies is Max Space. Two entrepreneurs, Aaron Kemmer, who's the co-founder of Max Space, and said that they're going to bring this technology to light in the next few years. I don't even understand this because it's so wild. I love to bring you wild stuff. Let's roll the clip. Here you can see they're building a lunar module mock-up, but also they have a clip of the interior of one of these modules. Absolutely massive amount of space for anybody that's traveling to space. So that was wild, right? You can see that there's an inflatable space station ready to be built. All of these modules can be connected. You can get different sizes, different shapes. They can do different things like medical. They could be a sleeping pod. There could be something like a workout pod. These things could be built into anything you wanted. Or maybe, like they want to do, they want to do a space hotel. They want to make it into a tourism destination. Put a couple of these pods up in space, in orbit. Fly people up there on a Falcon 9, dock with it. It'll be sturdy enough to do all this stuff, by the way. It's not inflatable like, you know, like a pool toy or something like that. It's very structurally rigid. So it can handle anything the space station can handle. And then some. It's actually more protected from projectiles in the space station, which is incredible. They want to disrupt space, the space flight industry. They want to disrupt space tourism, because right now there's only a few things you can do in space. You can fly to space and orbit the Earth. You can go to the space station, and that's about it. But in the future, if Max Space is successful, they're going to allow people to go to space and live in a space hotel for a little while. It's like an Airbnb in space. How cool is that? Or maybe, you know, maybe there's a shorter duration where you do get to orbit the Earth a bunch of times, then come back down. Dock with a Falcon 9, come back down, or with the Dragon, sorry, the Crew Dragon, and then come back down to Earth, you know, when your mission is done. And think about the scientific benefits of having a massive space station. Not only can you have space to do things, room to do things, but you can bring up equipment, say on a SpaceX Starship, massive equipment that you could feed into this thing in the future, or masses of equipment, not massive, because we don't know what the ports are going to be like on this in the future, but masses of equipment, tonnage of equipment that you can put into low Earth orbit inside of one of these modules. Sounds pretty impressive, right? And the co-owners or the co-founders, and Aaron Kemmer and Maximum De Jong, Max is a visionary in this space. Designer, engineer, manufacturing, space deployment, everything has already been done by Max, and he's built first two inflatable spacecraft pressure hulls, Genesis 1 and Genesis 2, which are circling the globe right now. So there's a proven track record from at least Max going forward, and also Aaron, as sort of like a, Aaron's the kind of the business guy behind this, as far as I know. And Max is the engineering brains behind it, but they do have a small team that they're working with to get this done. Medicine in space, engineering in space, space construction. Think about that. This could be a way for them to store, like storage modules as well in space. So if you bring up pieces for, I don't know, a habitat in space, some other sort of habitat in space, or some spacecraft where you need, there's a bunch of small parts that you need to put into one spot. This could be the way to do it. And you could transport them from either a Starship or a Falcon 9. And you could transport them and store them there until they're needed after you build the rest of the platform, until you put all these modules together. The thing is, you could build these modules, according to them, kind of as big as you want to. And what's really cool about this is that they can build something as big as the space station, or a little bit bigger, for a fraction of the cost. The space station costs $100 billion to run over the time that it's been up in space. And they think that they can get it down to about $1 billion in operational cost to build this thing in space, fly these and put them in space. So if they could cut it down to $1 billion, imagine the cost savings for that. And also imagine what else they could put into space for $100 billion, how large that space station would be. So they're saying a stadium size, like a football or soccer field size to begin with. Like that's what they're aiming for. Bigger than the ISS. They want to be bigger than the ISS. And there's more room inside than the ISS. And also, there's no reason why they can't go bigger than that. They're in microgravity, so the gravity isn't going to be yanking down on either end of this thing. It's going to float around the whole orbit of the Earth. I mean, the possibilities are endless up here, you know, with these modules. So I just want to let you know about it because I think it's a really impressive idea, and they have a really impressive track record as well. Max, especially Aaron as well. Aaron is, he's had a couple space programs, space companies in the past. Made in Space, which is space manufacturing. Magic, which is an AI assistant. He's also a former board member of Redwire Space, and he exited in 2021. And he's a board member of Outpost Space and a prolific space angel investor. That's what Aaron is. And Max is a visionary in design, engineering, and manufacture of space deployment architecture. So he built the first two inflatable spacecraft, and they're in orbit still. So that's pretty good as of right now. So Aaron, prestigious 30 under 30 Forbes list as well. So business is in Aaron's blood. Let's see. Aaron led Made in Space to fly dozens of successful space missions and over $250 million in NASA contracts. Aaron holds 6 patents in space-related tech with 4 additional patents pending. So I may have gotten a little bit wrong about Aaron. I thought Aaron was an angel investor to begin with here. And I know he's run some businesses in the past, and he has some patents. So I didn't say that in the beginning. So I'm like coming back full circle here to let you know about this. And then Redwire Space, of course, working right now with Max Space. Wild, 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 wild. I hope we have cameras. Hope there's a Dragon capsule or something up there that can film this, or they pop out a little module with a camera. That would be great. But we'll see. We'll see what happens in the near future. And I hope it's successful. That's all I can say. I hope it's successful. It's going to be wild.
Tesla has issued a recall for all 3,878 Cybertrucks it has delivered due to a defect where the accelerator pedal can become stuck, increasing the risk of accidents for the drivers and the people inside the vehicle, as well as other vehicles on the road. Now, the issue has been identified by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, or the NHTSA, which noted the potential for the pedal to lodge in the trim around the footwell, posing a serious safety risk. Now, this recall makes a challenging period for Tesla, following workforce deductions exceeding 10% or 14,000 people, and the departure of key executives earlier in this week. Now, these events were compounded by a legal setback involving CEO Elon Musk's compensation package, which shareholders are now reconsidering after a judge's ruling. Now, complaints about the Cybertruck's faulty accelerator pedal emerged recently, prompting Tesla to halt deliveries temporarily as it addresses the defect. On social media, Musk emphasized the company's cautious approach, stating that there have been no incidents or injuries reported in relation to this defect. So nobody's been hurt yet, which is great. And Tesla confirmed the technical cause of the problem to the NHTSA, linking it to an unauthorized use of lubricant during the assembly process, which compromised the pedal's attachment. This discovery led to the decision on April 12th to proceed with a full recall of the Cybertrucks. The company plans to rectify the issue by replacing or repairing the accelerator pedals on all affected Cybertrucks. Additionally, Tesla has begun incorporating a redesigned pedal in new vehicles and is addressing units currently in transit or at delivery centers. Now, despite the Cybertruck only beginning shipments late the previous year, this isn't its first recall. An earlier, less severe recall involved updating software across all Tesla models due to a font size of the warning lights. Now, Tesla's first revealed the Cybertruck in 2019, but its launch was delayed until last year due to production challenges and supply issues related to its batteries. The recent recalls and other setbacks have not only affected Tesla's operational momentum, but also its stock value, which saw a significant decline in the past week. The Drive reported that drivers experiencing stuck pedals could still halt their Cybertrucks using the brake, although the vehicle will continue to move slightly. Now, this flaw raised concerns over the vehicle's safety during operation. A social media post from Tesla owners indicated temporary halts in Cybertruck deliveries, with some reporting issues with the accelerator pedal getting wedged. The community response included sharing videos on social media and photos that highlight the defect's impact on pedal functionality, which grew greater attention to this defect. Now, despite no injuries or accidents, the seriousness of the potential risk prompted Tesla to take swift action about this. Musk reiterated on X that the company's focus on safety and the precautionary steps being taken are all about safety being the priority. Now, recently, Tesla Cybertruck customers noted on X that deliveries have resumed, with updates on VINs and scheduled delivery dates indicating that Tesla is progressing with fixes and addressing customer concerns effectively. Tesla's proactive measures in resolving the pedal issue show that they maintain high safety standards going forward with the Cybertruck. The automaker has historically emphasized safety in its vehicle designs, aiming to position its models as leaders in the respective categories. Now, as Tesla addresses the recent challenge, it's implementing both hardware replacements and production adjustments and will update software when needed. And the approach aims to ensure that all new and existing Cybertrucks meet stringent safety criteria before they are delivered to customers. And in response to the recall, Tesla has announced that affected vehicle owners will receive notification letters in June outlining the details and instructions for remedying the accelerator pedal issue at no cost to the owners. The first quarter of 2024 has seen Tesla recall approximately 2.4 million vehicles across various models for different issues, according to BusyCar. While most of these recalls are typically resolved with software updates, the current situation requires a more hands-on approach where you have to take it to the shop or they can come to you. And besides the accelerator pedal recall, Tesla has recently addressed other safety concerns through recalls, such as a significant recall in February concerning warning light font sizes. Furthermore, an ongoing investigation into power steering issues by U.S. safety regulators has been escalated to an engineering analysis. But Tesla was swift about this. They are concerned for the safety of their drivers. That's one of the major key features that Tesla offers that some other automakers don't. They have ongoing efforts to innovate and improve the vehicle lineup, and they're resilient in the face of operational changes. The company continues to adapt its production and quality assurance processes to prevent future issues for the Cybertruck and all other vehicles in their lineup. Tesla Inc. recently announced a substantial reduction of its workforce, cutting approximately 14,000 jobs, or about 10% of all of its employees. That's an ongoing financial challenge at Tesla right now. It's a shift in the company's strategic direction, and there's cost reductions at foot. And a new focus on specific technological advancements, such as a robo-taxi in development, and the manner in which these layoffs were conducted has drawn significant criticism, and that means that there's issues in corporate communication and management empathy at this point. Now, the layoffs were communicated via email, with many employees learning about their job loss in less than ideal circumstances, and reports indicate that some employees received their termination notices in the middle of their work shift or upon attempting to access their workplace, only to find their security credentials deactivated. This method of notification has been perceived as impersonal and indicative of poor planning and poor management, and also poor consideration for the impacted employee's emotional and professional well-being. Now, an incident at Texas Gigafactory illustrated the harsh reality of these layoffs. An employee shared their experience with a local news outlet, stating, "I was literally standing outside trying to figure out why my badge wasn't working. Why is it that I can't log in?" Only to find out that they had been laid off. Such instances show that this is abrupt and disorganized, and it's not to be taken lightly. Now, the official communication from Tesla cited a thorough organizational review and the different decisions to globally reduce headcount as the reasons behind the layoffs. The affected employees were informed that their positions were eliminated due to this restructuring, adding to the high-stress situation and the uncertainty of this time. Now, the reaction to this layoff has been overwhelmingly negative, with critics pointing out the lack of foresight and empathy in Tesla's layoff strategy. Comparisons were made to previous layoffs conducted by other companies by Elon Musk, where similar patterns of abrupt and minimally communicated job cuts were observed. From a business perspective, Tesla maintains that the layoffs are a necessary step towards adjusting to current market demands and financial realities. The company is navigating decreased sales and a significant shift in project focus, moving away from some early automotive plans in favor of developing new technologies like robo-taxis. We've heard about this for years, and it looks like it may be happening. Now, despite legal compliance, offering laid-off employees compensation through June 15th, which aligns with a 60-day notice period, the approach taken by Tesla has been questioned. The focus appears to be on legal adherence rather than genuinely supportive practices that consider the well-being of the individuals affected. Now, personal accounts and broader reports suggest that the layoff process added significantly to the emotional distress experienced by employees. Losing a job abruptly destabilizes personal and financial plans, and the manner in which these layoffs were executed only intensified these difficulties. And while Tesla is known for its innovation and has been significant success in the electric vehicle market, companies' internal practices, particularly in human resources, have often been criticized. Situation shows that Tesla and the related employee treatment is not up to par. Now, the layoffs are part of a broader context where Tesla is adjusting its strategic goals. Earlier announcements had focused on producing a more affordable electric car, the $25,000 EV, if you will. A recent shift seemed to prioritize the development of autonomous driving technology and other high-tech products. This restructuring shows that the market is changing. And the operations at Tesla are also changing, including missed delivery dates that have happened recently and reported issues with the launch of new models like the Cybertruck. Additionally, rumors about the cancellation of the low-cost Model 2 vehicle have added to uncertainty, although Elon Musk has disputed these claims. Financially, Tesla has experienced a significant downturn, with a 37% drop in share prices this year and a notable decline in sales. The first quarter report showed an 8.5% decrease in deliveries compared to the previous year, marking the first such decline since disruptions caused by the 2020 global pandemic. Now, amidst these strategic and operational upheavals, Tesla has also proposed a substantial pay package for CEO Elon Musk, similar to a previous compensation plan that was voided by a court decision due to governance concerns. This proposal is likely to be scrutinized in light of the layoffs and financial performance. It's $58 billion, by the way. And in response to criticisms of the layoff process, Elon Musk acknowledged that some severance packages were incorrectly low and assured that these errors will be corrected. This acknowledgement, however, does little to mitigate the broader concerns about how the layoffs were managed and communicated. Now, Musk's email to employees attempted to address some of the fallout, stating, "As we reorganize Tesla, it has come to my attention that some severance packages are incorrectly low. My apologies for this mistake. It is being corrected immediately. And despite these efforts, the damage to employee morale and public perception may be harder to mend. And looking forward, Tesla's management faces the challenge of rebuilding trust not only with its workforce, but also with investors and the public. The company must navigate the strategic pivot while ensuring more consideration and strategic handling of its workforce, especially during transitions that involve job cuts." Now, the layoffs at Tesla have thus sparked a broader discussion about corporate responsibility and the ethical implications of how layoffs are conducted. For a company at the forefront of technological innovation, the human element of business practices remains a critical area for their improvement. Hey, thank you so much for listening today. I really do appreciate your support. If you could take a second and hit the subscribe or the follow button on whatever podcast platform that you're listening on right now, I'd greatly appreciate it. It helps out the show tremendously, and you'll never miss an episode. And each episode is about 10 minutes or less to get you caught up quickly. And please, if you want to support the show even more, go to patreon.com/stagezero. And please take care of yourselves and each other, and I'll see you tomorrow.